Hi, I'm Philip Shepherd. It's my pleasure to welcome you to this amazing once-in-a-lifetime conference, and especially to the Meditation and Breathwork channel, which I'm proud to be sponsoring because meditation and breathwork are essential to my teachings. I'm the founder of the Embodied Present Process, or TEP, which is based on my two books and is taught worldwide. And here's one thing I believe about meditation and breathwork. You limit your experience of both if you imagine that your mind is just the thoughts in your head. Your mind permeates your every cell. Every stirring of energy within your body is an expression of it. So, if you wish to calm your mind, the most direct route is to develop the skills that enable you to feel the body's energy and ground it in the spaciousness of the present. That's what my work is about. If that appeals to you, I hope you'll check out my two presentations, one on this channel and one on the main stage. You might also be interested in a special offer exclusive to the Embodiment Conference to listen to one of my embodied meditations for yourself for free. You can find a link to the special offer in the description of this presentation or on the show notes. And now, enjoy the presentation.
Welcome again, Kelly. Just wanted to make sure that everyone knew about the chat and about the Q&A, so that as we start with Kelly's presentation, everyone, please make use of the chat for any questions, comments, anything for the tech host, Steve, and please use the Q&A button to ask any questions. Steve and I'll be monitoring, so please do look at the chat to see if we've been able to answer any of your questions as Kelly goes through her performance this evening. Have fun. Enjoy the ride.
Great. Thank you both very much. What a wonderful conference for people to drop into and really bring more embodiment into their life. And I'm thrilled to be here. My name, as they mentioned, is Kelly Carpenter. I am the founder of The Other Side of Average, or TOSA is the acronym, Therapy for the Soul. And I'm a Chopra certified transcendent meditation teacher, a certified breathwork practitioner, a conscious line coupling coach, and the creator of the 10 steps to finding freedom and empowerment on the other side of forgiveness and, you know, the letting go process. I'm also a mom, and I have raised three kids with the understanding of all the practices actually that I'm going to share with you today. So before we get started, there's a lot to cover. My goal is to share some what I think is really profound, important information in the simple way as possible. And I invite you just really to tune out distractions, to drop into this moment, turn off your cell phones, close any other browsers, and let's make this as interactive as possible. So I'm thrilled to see so many people that have already added some comments, letting us know where they're from. If you're just dropping in now, if you want to share that, that would be great. And as Ali already mentioned, the Q&A section is for questions specific, but you might actually want to write them down in case I answer them throughout the presentation. And at the end, we're just going to have a really limited amount of time. So you may want to, you know, be really clear on which questions I've answered and which ones you really are still desiring me to answer. And the chat box will be for our ongoing chat and communication. Throughout the presentation, there's going to be times where I'll be asking you to drop into the chat box. And it'll be at the very end that we're going to do an inward process. So the beginning is going to be information, it's going to be teaching, things that you can really take home with, and then we're going to do a more embodied practice, an inner process. And if we have time, then we might also do a bit of a quiz, which is kind of fun. And it's about discovering how safe you seem to others. It's your level of emotional maturity, presence, and overall consciousness level that you operate from. So to get started, let me ask you, do you sometimes feel overwhelmed or stressed, or as if that you have lost yourself as a result? And you can add that into the chat box. They're simple yes and no probably questions. or answers, I should say. And have you ever felt trapped in really difficult emotions like frustration, anxiety, or depression? Yes, lots of yeses. And, you know, do you worry that your reactive patterns will negatively affect your kids or maybe your partner? Or the thought of really being able to support your children's mental and emotional well-being seems a bit daunting. And, you know, I'm sure that we can all relate. I mean, how many of us were given the tools or had the role model of emotional stability and safety? Or how many of us are really living or even chasing someone else's version of happiness? Plus, we are living in a world that is filled with uncertainty and chaos. I mean, everybody right now is dealing with something. So today, what we're going to do is we're going to go over what I call the TASA method, and it's my five-layer approach to conscious healing. We're going to look at meditation, the three meditations specifically, and how to use them to become more present, engaged, and responsive to life instead of enslaved by it. We're going to explore the three specific types of meditation and their differences. And we're going to look at the five parts, actually, as five pieces to unraveling difficult emotions or overwhelm and building a safe container to properly process them. And in turn, then we actually get to meet our unmet needs, and we take everyone else off the hook in the process too. And at the end, we're going to look at how you can use meditation to really support your kids mentally and emotionally so that they find true fulfillment in life. So let's jump right into what I call the TASA method, and it's my five-layer approach to conscious healing. And I want to talk a little bit about us as a human being, and it's hyphenated for a reason. There's three aspects to ourself. I'm sure that, you know, many of you, it's not new to hear the terminology of mind, body, and soul. And we actually have what I call the subtle body. It's our psychological body. It's the intellect, it's the thoughts, it's emotions. It is also comprised of the ego. And then we have our physical body. It's our physiological body. It's our environment, our energy, and our actual physical body. And then we have our causal body or our spiritual body. And that's our personal soul's expression. It's also our connection to the collective consciousness and universal consciousness or Brahman or isness. And in today's world, there are so many people that are trapped in their mind. I mean, you know, just think about it. How often do we teach kids the ABCs and the 1, 2, 3s from the time that they're little? But do we really take the time out to teach them to connect to their intuition, that real inherent wisdom that's within all of us, or to learn to listen to the messages of their bodies? You know, or the interconnectedness of life. When my oldest son was 3, I remember him saying, you know, you need to talk like the trees, if he ever heard my husband and I, you know, disagreeing on something. And that same child later in his teen years, you know, he was going into junior high or high school, and he was noticing how many kids were talking about the medications that they were taking, whether they got them Costco size or, you know, at a drugstore, or how many of them were inflicting self-harm and discussing their suicide attempts. And he came home one day and he said, why is that? You know, and this is true. He says, I struggle with my emotions. I feel depressed sometimes. I have anxiety. Why don't I want to hurt myself? And I turned to him and I asked him, you know, why is that? And he processed this for a few minutes. We had a bit of inquiry around it. And then he came to me and he said, it's because I feel a connection to something bigger than myself. These skills of being able to tune in and connect are equal, if not more important, for our overall well-being and the well-being of our children. We're meant to traverse all of these layers so that we feel whole and connected in the face of whatever life presents. And let's explore what happens when we don't have this support. and tools to deal with the life's ebbs and flows. Life still happens no matter whether we, you know, are feeling embodied or disconnected. You know, many people experience trauma, conflict, maybe it's loss or prolonged stressful periods. And in this diagram, at the beginning on the left there, it shows us as an infant, a connected, innocent human being. We come into this world in our human form, yet we're still connected to our beingness. I mean, think about it. Kids naturally want to love. They naturally want to forgive. They naturally want to let go. We're born to love and we learn to fear and to hate. And when we experience difficult situations in life that we're unable to process, we end up getting lost in the circumstance and it creates fractures or fragments like the circles that you see there, the space that's being created, the disconnection. We feel that disconnection. We feel separate. And we've lost touch with this really innate part of us that I call our beingness. And the two circles that you see on the diagram really represent the duality that we all experience being a human being. You know, the top circle is our humanness. It's this part of us is, you know, defined by circumstances and the rules are always changing. This is our outer self or ego mind or human condition, world of humanity. And then we have our beingness. This part of us is bigger than circumstance. And it lives actually by eternal truths. It's our inner self, our soul, our true self, our pure consciousness. There's lots of different pointer words that you can use for each side of each part of these. I call them our humanness and our beingness. And when we don't have the right support and we don't have the right tools to integrate and heal our struggles, then we walk around fragmented, wounded, and defined by our circumstance. And we wonder why we feel overwhelmed, stuck, or worn out. This one part of us, our beingness, is really calling us to let go. It's calling us to love and to forgive and to join. And this other part of us, our humanness, is trapped in the limited mind and all of the stories that we have about why we're suffering. That part of us tends to blame, judge, withdraw, and feel alone or unworthy. And depending upon the severity of, you know, the fragments or the wounds, like in the very center of that diagram, we might become so fragmented that we experience really deep levels of suffering, turmoil, disease, or we face possibly mental health issues. But the good news is that the purpose of suffering is to find its cause. And these wounds, the suffering, these reactive patterns, the overwhelming emotions, ultimately all only have one purpose. And that's to help us remember, to show us where we got lost, to direct us back to our source of connection and empowerment. Life is always, without fail, happening for us, not to us. Life is supporting and nudging us along every step of the way. We just need to develop the tools to tune in, to listen, to unravel these situations and experiences because they're there for us. And we need to traverse all of what it means to be a human being in order to meet these challenges. Our human spirit is resourceful, and our human condition isn't. It's limited and it copes until we just can't anymore. And this coping then is where, you know, drugs and alcohol or any addictions or distractions all come in. They distract us from the pain, which stops the healing process. And we cannot heal what we aren't willing to feel. So now let's take a look at the layers or the stages or the steps to healing and integrating these fragmented parts so that we come back into wholeness, so that we break the cycle and we become more, you know, whole, conscious human beings, and so that our kids don't inherit them. And, you know, because we pass on our conscious and our unconscious patterns to our children, whether we like it or not. And in this process of becoming whole, we get to meet life's challenges with more grace and resourcefulness than we otherwise could. And this is where we get to respond instead of react. And we move into a place of trusting ourselves and trusting life. So the first stage or the first layer is called inner calling. And there's this is where we have a deep desire, a yearning, or maybe for some people, it's actually a wake-up call. It could be come in the form of an accident. It can be a loss. It can be an illness. It can be a divorce. And either, you know, however that's presented itself for you, at this stage, we typically have an awareness that more is available or needed. Even if our current circumstance is also wrapped in beauty and we're grateful for what we have, it's kind of a both and. We can be grateful and know that our current state isn't ultimately nourishing or isn't sustainable. And this is a really critical turning point because it doesn't mean that we make the necessary changes just because we have a longing for more. It doesn't mean that we make the necessary changes just because of an awareness that more is possible. For most of us, we need to commit to the next three layers, which is the conscious support, conscious learning, and conscious practice. So conscious support is a guide, a mentor, a teacher. Because if we could have implemented change fully on our own when we hit these critical points, then simply reading the book would have been enough. We know that if this real change that we're seeking is going to happen, we need the right kind of support. And in this process, when we enter into conscious learning, we learn about ourselves, we grow our knowledge, we bring the unconscious conscious, because what we don't know, we don't know. And all we really know is that there's more. And what is happening around us is actually what our unconscious self wants. I know that that could be a hard thing to swallow, but if we want a little peek into our unconscious beliefs, all you have to do is look at our life. So if you want something different, it's really vital to have the support in unraveling the stories, the pain or the struggle, and being able to connect to that which is bigger than the circumstance so that we aren't defined by it anymore. And then comes conscious practice. Not only is that used for the actual healing, but it's also the integration process. It's the really coming into full embodiment of it. And I break it down into three practices. And it's a practice of stillness, of really understanding presence, and using specialized inquiry. And they all relate back to that diagram. So it's three practices that really work in different ways that are all unique and really needed. And then there's embodied refinement. And that's the implementation. That's where we get to move through life with new awareness, new expansion, you know, transformation. We become more unapologetically ourselves. And then guess what? The cycle repeats. And we, you know, might have another yearning or some unconscious places that are coming up that need to be seen, acknowledged, and let go of. So I wanted to share a little bit about my story and how all of this relates to me, how I came to this point. And that's me in the picture, the little girl one. My mom was struggling, overwhelmed, reactionary, manipulative, and unsafe much of the time. When I was a child. And she admitted that she was a little bit like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. And in 1976, she knew that she was really struggling. She was going through a really messy, manipulative divorce, and she craved change. She knew that she needed help. So she actually went to learn Transcendental Meditation, or TM, and she took me along as well. I was 6 at the time. And like many things, we really don't realize the impact of our choices or practices until much later. I mean, how many of you have, you know, implemented some practices, you're going along with the practice, and then you realize, oh, wow, I realize I don't do this part anymore, or I've gained this, you know, new awareness. The gift that my mom gave me through Transcendental Meditation was to stay connected to that part of me that was bigger than what I was facing. It was bigger than the dysfunction, the trauma, or the chaos. So one way that this showed itself as a teen is I used to say this statement over and over again as this repeated statement as I was witnessing different things that were going on. And it was, I was saying, I can only hear myself think for so long and I need to make a change. And what this meant for me was that I was aware that my thoughts were actually the cause of my suffering, not so much what happened to me. It was, I was aware that my freedom from this was linked to my ability to integrate the narrative and the story that was going on. Sure, what happened hurt, but actually being trapped, reliving the event was actually the true cause of my strife. And at age 19, I went to a counselor on my own accord because I wanted help letting go of my story. But guess what? She bought into my story. She didn't see each of those aspects of me. All she could see was that limited part that was stuck in the humanness. She couldn't see that I wasn't my story. All she saw was my story. And the circumstances were real, sure, but it wasn't the real reason for the suffering. And I wanted help. And so after two sessions, I realized that she couldn't help me. And you know, I was aware, you know, certainly that the feelings needed to be validated, but I didn't want to justify the story anymore, because that is what was keeping me stuck and defined. And that really set me on a spiritual path of understanding how to not only stay connected within through transcendental meditation or transcendent meditation, I'll get into the categories in a minute, but to be able to develop the skills to unravel the emotions, to reframe the narrative that was really causing the pain, to reframe my story completely, which links back to those, you know, three conscious practices in the TASA method. So that we can understand and integrate a newer, truer meaning and purpose within the situation. And we can connect to the part of us that's bigger than what happened so that we can actually become fully free from it. And the other photo in that is my three kids that I raised with these same practices. And I've seen them, all three of what I'm going to share with you today, I've seen them impact their life as well as all the clients that I have and their children. And so let's get into the three types of meditation. And they are observant, focused, and transcendent. And they're all different. They all have their own unique benefits, and they all actually produce different brain waves. Each activate or deactivate the brain in different ways. And observant is a practice where you're observing, following an experience without manipulation, where you're just witnessing what is. And that can be mindfulness meditations, walking meditations, Kriya yoga, or, you know, somatic, meditations. And then there's focused, and that's where we're holding one thing in our mind or our concentration. That can be a candle meditation, a guided meditation. It can be more breath practices that are more pranayama or, you know, focused breath practices, visualization, kundalini. And then there's transcendent, and that is where we use the use of a silent mantra. It's a tool for the mind. It's an effortless practice. And this is where we use the mind in just the right way to go beyond the thinking process, to go beyond the mind. And this is the one that I use and teach as that consistent daily practice for that full integration of the mind, body, spirit, mind, body, soul. And there's three types of meditation that fall into this one. And it's TM, or transcendental meditation, or PSM, which is primordial sound, and Vedic mantra meditation. And I'm a PSM teacher with many years of TM practice. But one of the distinctions between them is that the first two start and end with the practice. So if we start focused on a candle, we end focused on a candle. With a transcendent practice, you start with the practice, but you transcend the practice. And, you know, it's really important with meditation becoming such a buzzword not to confuse an actual meditation practice with things like relaxation, reflection, or prayer, which are incredibly beautiful practices. You know, prayer is like talking to God, and meditation is about listening. It's about developing the ability to listen. And also worth mentioning is more of an approach to meditation, a monastic approach to meditation, which is, you know, different than what the majority of people are going to do in their meditation practice. And the biggest thing that I'd like you to take away from as far as these three meditations is that practice is the key. Practice is actually what defines a meditation practice. And I always tell my students that you can't avoid that which you seek when you're implementing the practice. That, you know, what we're experiencing in life is really a byproduct of our daily discipline, our rituals, and our habits. All right. And in my courses or the work that I do with families and couples, I use all three in many different ways, and they do all overlap. They're all unique, yes, and they're also all essential to our ability to really consciously evolve, to consciously heal, and to be able to get to the point where we're using life and its obstacles as our teacher. I mean, can you imagine a world where we were all given the tools or, you know, had the support to connect to the essence of who we are, to listen to the messages of our body, or to be able to use our mind instead of it using us? I mean, you can even type in, you know, how would your life be different if you were taught some of what you currently know as a child? You know, how could you see this supporting your children in their growth and their stages and their obstacles that they face throughout their life? You know, the Dalai Lama said, you know, we could end world conflict in one generation if we taught every 7 or 8 year old to meditate. So now let's get into the emotional overwhelm and the process that I'm going to be walking you through very shortly. And, you know, when we're talking about emotional overwhelm and building an emotional container, creating emotional safety. You know, first, I'm sure that everyone here that's ever experienced overwhelm or stress or has really stuck in conflict or inner turmoil knows that it seems like one big ball of messiness. But there are actually 5 different parts to emotional overwhelm or to emotions themselves. And one part is where it is in the body. Our body notices emotions before we do. We need to learn to listen before our body has to shout to get our attention. Our body isn't like an inner compass. And then we actually have the emotion itself. And all emotions have a purpose. You know, there's some more surface ones that are compensation, you know, surface or reactive type of ones that are all compensations for deeper, truer emotions. But all emotions actually take about 90 seconds to move through. But how many of us spend years hanging on to that emotion or really living that emotion? That resentment, that anger, the grievance, the sadness. Why is that? It's actually because of number 3. It's the narrative. The narrative is the story, the belief, the meaning that we're making of the emotion and the situation, which is also tied to our unconscious beliefs or childhood wounds. And the next part is a need, that all of this is covering up a true unmet need from our past. You know, those fractures and fragments that I talked about in that diagram with the circles, there was a need that was happening there. There was something that we forgot about ourselves. And so this is where we get to parent our inner child, where we make a new meaning of the situation. You know, we've all had difficult situations, maybe some deep trauma or loss that we struggle to find the purpose in or the meaning in. Therefore, those situations haven't been fully integrated. And when we have these underlying unmet needs, too often we're also find ourselves looking outside of ourselves for someone or something to be the answer. And we end up having expectations on people around us or situations around us that are never going to be met, because nothing outside of us is ever going to be our answer. And when we're able to bring these places conscious, then we can meet these unmet needs, then we get to take other people off the hook. And actually what that means for us in this process is that we feel seen and heard, and the outside actually ends up reflecting that back to us. And then what comes after that is we're actually able to receive. The pain isn't a gift. The pain, the overwhelm, the shame, this emotional turbulence isn't a gift. But there is always a gift in the center of the pain if we're willing to take the time to do this kind of work, to implement these practices. And by doing this work, we get to, you know, the gifts that we get to reclaim are our innocence. We move into greater authenticity. We feel a real sense of inner confidence. We experience more love for ourselves. And there might be some of you that maybe have experienced horrific trauma, or you're so caught in the overwhelm that you might be saying, there's no way there can be a gift in this. And I actually run a program called Evolve Beyond Our Story. And I work deeply with the wounded victim narrative and reframing it. And what I can say is that if we carry deep wounded victim narrative, it's probably because wrong happened. But the really important part, as in, you know, relates to my story, is that trauma changes us. Yes, that's for certain. But how it changes us is a choice. Only you are responsible for what you make of it. You know, to have it work for you instead of against you. I mean, how long you carry it and the damage you inflict on those that you love as a result is up to you. Up to you to get the help, to develop the tools, the support for that conscious healing. And, you know, I remember looking at my mom and just really clearly seeing the cycle of pain. She felt such deep shame and guilt for how she parented, for how she showed up in the world. And she was hurting. You know, hurt people hurt people. And I remember thinking, if she could just forgive herself, then everyone could move forward. Because guess what? I loved her anyway. I just wanted her to be her, because underneath that pain, there was immense beauty. She had a huge heart and deep love. But her inability to process her painful emotions really kept her trapped in this cycle. And like all of us, she was so much more than her pain. And had she known how to process these difficult emotions, she could have experienced more of herself and life in a completely different way. And my mom actually passed away last December. And in her last 24 hours, you know, she talked about her regrets, and that wasn't new. It wasn't the first time we had really open, you know, communication. But all of her regrets in those last few hours were about the conflict in relationships. They're about that disharmony, that overwhelming emotion that created conflict. And so actually I want to share another story. I have an 84-year-old client who, you know, has so much awareness, but has lived in a constant state of suffering from childhood trauma. And we've spent most of our time working together, building a container so that she can hold these difficult emotions, because we have to feel safe in our own body. We have to understand how to embody. This is an embodiment conference, so that we can tap into that part of us and finally find peace. So she wanted to find peace before she leaves this world, instead of spending the rest of the time that she has left struggling against the emotions that are tied to the trauma. And it's been an absolutely incredible experience working with her. She's actually going to be 85 this month. And it's so incredible to see her doing this at this stage and finally experiencing peace beyond the struggle and the overwhelm. And so I once had somebody ask me, when am I ever going to be free from these difficult emotions? And guess what? We're never going to be free from the full range of emotion. We're always going to have them, but how we respond is what changes. You know, our ability to embody these conscious practices, build a container. We build a solid, safe container to process them. And so we get to use our emotions instead of them using us. And it's worthy of mentioning that even when it looks like someone else is causing our emotions, it's always there for us. If we're the one being triggered, that emotion is actually in us. You know, does it excuse what somebody else might have done? No. But it is there in you, and therefore it's there for you. And you need to know how to properly process them so you don't get lost, so that you can heal, so that you can break the cycle. And there was one time, my middle son, he was 17 at the time, and he was away with some friends, you know, skiing on a mountain. And something happened that really triggered him, made him angry, he was upset. And because he's done this work with me so much, that he knew he needed to take some moments out to process his overwhelming feeling and anger that he had. And so he took the moment to do the process that I'm going to share with you in just a couple of minutes. And he was able to hold the anger that he was feeling, and he was able to respond instead of create unnecessary conflict in the situation. And he came home with a grin from ear to ear. And he said, he was just so excited to share that he was just simply able to hold what he said, difficult emotions. And guess what, Mom? I could even just love them. And you know, we have a choice. We can continue to cope and react, or we can consciously heal and respond in life. So let's talk a little bit about meditation. I don't think I asked, is, you know, who here, I'd love a quick, you know, hand of yeses of who here is a parent? And if so, what are the ages of your kids? So, or maybe you work. You know, maybe you're a professional here and you work with families and children and you're here to just take in a little bit more. Yes, yes. Okay, cool. Awesome. So let's take a look at the impact of these meditation practices in reference to the ages and stages of your kids. Great. Yeah, nice. Four kids. Great. Three. Wonderful. Variety of ages. Great. Thank you for sharing. So what I'm going to share with you is really important to understand. It's what's possible. And just, I really want to let you know that perfection is the lowest standard that you can hold for yourself. The actual growth and learning is the only perfection that we can seek. It's that evolution, that conscious evolution, that cycle that I mentioned. And I go in my courses, I go into much more depth. We address really specific situations, the age categories, how long, what if this happens or that happens. But today I just want to give you a general. So during the, and I see somebody's a grandma, that's great. during the prenatal stage, this is about our own inner connection and our connection with the baby that's growing in us. It's about the ability to trust our body. It's about bringing more ease even into the birth process. For me, and I know this sounds really strange, and if you knew my whole story, it'd be a little, you know, a little bit different. But for me, it was actually experiencing blissed out pain-free births, at least for my last two. And then we get into the 0 to 5, and I want to relate back to the diagram, remembering that, you know, all of us come into this world an infant or young child, we're innocent and we're connected to our beingness. We're whole. And at this stage, actually every stage, but especially this stage, these practices about you doing the work so that you you create that safe container for your kids to explore their place in the world, as well as deal with the overwhelm and the sleepless nights that we experience as a mom. And breath awareness is a great one to introduce to toddlers. It's, you know, just the impact of teaching your children to breathe into a stubbed toe or a skinned knee has a massive impact. And then we you know, get into the 6 to 12 year olds, and these guys, you got a captive audience. They're a sponge. This is where there's usually more routine, more ritual. There's a love of learning. They can actually contemplate inquiry like, where in my body is that emotion hiding? They can explore thoughts that are attached to emotions. They can implement all three of those practices, and we then create healthy habits for life. And at the ages of 13 and 19, if practiced, they have these three amazing tools to meet the huge challenges that are just part of being a teen, no matter where you grew up. You know, who here had, you know, difficulty in their teen years? And if they don't have the right tools, this is where we get lost. This is where, you know, kids have a really hard time meeting life or thinking about future growth. There can be really rebellious. You know, all of the stages and times in our life where we're experiencing hormonal changes, menopause, even pregnancy, teen years, are really critical times. And they're, you know, they're amazing times as far as our ability to process inner pain. And I see this with my three kids. I love watching them and how they support each other and how they're really learning to process life, beliefs even that they had in their childhood, and how that's moving through their life right now, and how through these practices, they're actually able to reframe them at this stage so they can move into that next phase of being an adult and facing life in a whole new way. And as adults with adult children, you know, this is a time where if they've had these practices, they feel connected. They're emotionally mature. They really become unstoppable. They live into their purest potential. And then the relationship is really mutually supportive. And after serving and working with so many moms, I've really, and parents, I've really discovered that the greatest fear is of losing our children. It's the greatest fear of a parent. And in the younger years, that is really about the actual death of a child. And in the older years, it actually starts turning into about losing connection with them, because that's what's more real at the time. And they start losing connection because of dysfunctional emotional patterns that are getting in the way of a healthy relationship. And by practicing and embodying these three practices, we create emotional safety. We create an unbreakable connection between ourselves and our adult children. And how this impacts us in our partnership is when we're really practicing these practices, building conscious relationships, we're tending our own garden. We naturally work on our side of the fence so that we're on the same page and we're both going in the same direction. And the one thing to say that no matter where you are in this stage is that it's never too late. You know, I had one client come to me and she said, oh God, is it too late? Like, has the damage already been done? I haven't been a great parent. I wasn't present. And I answered her question with a question. And I said, if your mom, who I knew she had a difficult relationship, woke up tomorrow, and you guys can all think of this in your own worlds and people that you might have some conflict with. If that person woke up emotionally safe, present, conscious, and loving the next day, how would that affect you as an adult? Is it ever too late to bring more consciousness, more embodiment into our life, more awareness? It's never too late. And the only failure is failing to do the right thing for the right reasons. So our kids are only in our care for a short time. You need you and your kids need you, and the time is now. So that's it. That was a lot of talking. What I want to do now is an inner process with you. I want to walk you through some of those stages to deal with emotional overwhelm, to uncover your needs and some of the narrative that's underneath it. Then we're going to hopefully have time for a Q&A. And look at the next steps after that. So if you want to get comfy, just kind of tune in. I'm gonna set myself up a little higher here. And just let go. I know that that was a lot of information. So it's probably a lot swirling around right now. And just take a few deep breaths. and let go. Give your mind a break. And I'm going to guide you through the five parts to those emotions or to emotional overwhelm. And this is not a time to overthink. This is a real witnessing moment. It's about coming really still, embodied, tuning in, listening, and witnessing. So as you breathe deeply, breathe as if you can breathe all the way down deep into your hips. Just maybe bringing your attention to your forehead, your eyes, your cheeks, your jaw, and just letting them soften. Feeling the weight of your head as it's being supported by your shoulders. And your shoulders feeling the weight of those. And how it's being supported by your torso. And then just noticing that your whole body is being supported by the chair, the furniture, the floor, which in turn is being supported by the earth. Just letting yourself sink in this moment, just that much more, bringing that much more presence to your physical being, noticing the contact points that your body makes with each other, noticing the temperature changes. And using your breath as a tool, breathing as if you can breathe all the way down deep into your hips. Breathing into every cell of your body. And what I want you to do in this place of presence and connection, embodiment, so I really want you to tune into what part of your physical body is speaking to you. Just noticing, not making meaning of it, not overthinking it in your mind, but just noticing energetically what part of your body is calling for your attention right now. And what I want you to do is I want you to bring all of your attention and your awareness to that single point of your body. Breathing. Listening. And as you bring this much awareness to that part of your body, I want you to notice what emotion is at the very center of that sensation, that experience, or just that energetic calling. And we're just naming it. We're trusting what pops up without overthinking. There's no need to change. You need to change it. No need to make meaning of it. Or just witnessing, acknowledging, and validating. And as you breathe into the very center of that emotion, I want you to notice what emotion is in the very center of that first emotion. Again, just witnessing. It's nothing to do. I'm not trying to get rid of it. We're actually just bringing awareness to it. We're witnessing.
And as we bring this much presence, awareness, and acknowledgement to that emotion, I just want you to notice if there's another emotion in the very center of that one. Just breathing, witnessing, acknowledging. Now I want you to tune in just a little bit more. I want you to notice if there's a thought, a belief, a narrative at the very heart of that. Again, not overthinking, just really trusting what you notice. Acknowledging the narrative. For some of you, it might be a limiting thought or belief. For others, it might be more expansive. There's no right or wrong. But if it is limiting, I want you to also notice what is truer. What is truer than that emotion? So if it was like, I'm alone, or I'm not good enough, or anything like that, what's truer than that narrative? And as you breathe into this, these places of more consciousness, more awareness, I want you to inquire into what it is that you truly need. What is it that you truly need? And as you really acknowledge this need, you breathe into this awareness, this true need. I want you to notice what pathways are in front of you to meet that need. And see if you can think of three ways that you can meet that need for yourself. And now what I want you to do is you bring these into your consciousness. I want you to just really acknowledge the process, like, you know, validate the emotions. Give thanks to the body. Notice the gratitude for bringing this pathway into your conscious awareness so you can step forward into more fulfillment by meeting these needs. And as you breathe deeply into this moment, whenever you're ready, you can open up your eyes. And we are getting close to the end, so I had to rush that just a little bit. I just want to really briefly just take a few more seconds to say that sometimes in this process, so we start with the body, the emotion, the narrative, the need, and then from there we meet those needs and we get to receive. We integrate, we become more expansive. Sometimes our emotion, even though our body feels emotions before we do, sometimes we actually start with the emotion if that's really reactive, if that's really real and present in the moment. And because of the time, I'm just running a couple minutes late, and I know that the team here at the Embodiment Conference needs to come on and do their close up, as I had until, you know, 5 minutes to, which I'm at right now. I'd love to hear what stood out for you in this process, not so much or the process, the conversation that we had. And I would also love to offer each of you a recording to that, to to that process and a bit of a training for it. So you can go to theothersideofaverage.com, TEC, which is the embodiment conference, in order to fill out that form. And I will send you a training and a recording of how to use that. You know, that narrative can be about inner child. It can, there's just so many different ways that I work with that process, and I'd love to share that with you today. And with that, as I know that, is it Steve, are you going to be the first one to get on here to talk after me?
Yes, I'm here, Kelly.
Okay.
Ready to roll.
So what I'll do is I'm going to look through the Q&As as Allie and or Steve have some closing things to talk about. Does that sound good, Allie and Steve?
Perfect, perfect. Okay. And I'll be coming back to you just at the very end. Yes.
Okay, great.
Okay. So let's see if I can find myself here. So as I wait for my video to come on, I will just mention a few things of gratitude. Kelly, what a beautiful offering. Thank you so much. And just to everyone who's on the call right now, please make sure that you look on the portal and see all of the schedules that you can fill in and spend these next weeks completely enmeshed in the conference. Such an exciting time for all of us. And to remember that you can upgrade by being able to own the library of all of these 1,000 presenters over these 10 days, and that you can then digest all of that material in your own time. And so if that's something that you could do, we would love that to happen. It would be a big thank you to us. And it also enables that everybody else can access it for free. So if there's anything that Steve wants to share with you, please look into the upgrade info right there in the chat box. And one last thing for Kelly before we close. Kelly, yeah. Thank you so much for that beautiful, beautiful meditative ending. And as we let go of your story and we dissolve in this moment, what is your favorite top tip now to stay embodied? What might you share with the group as we finalize our time together?
I really feel that that full embodied experience kind of points back to our ability to unravel the narrative, and to, you know, to use inquiry to unravel the narrative, to evolve beyond the story, to understand what it means to be fully present in and grounded in our physical body, and to utilize some sort of transcendent or stillness practice to connect to that which is bigger than the circumstance.
And with that, I pull my hands together here in New York to all of you who are listening and will be listening later. Thank you so much, Kelly, and very good wishes to you for your work.
Yes, thank you everyone for attended, listening, and for everyone in behind the scenes in the Embodiment Conference for putting this on. So much gratitude.
Okay. Thank you, Kelly.
All right.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye, everyone.